Welcome back, everybody. My name is Kaz.
This is Medibot.
And this is episode 61 of the Skulls Cast, wherein Medibot and myself review two games.
Two games? Okay, to be fair, I review a game, then you review a game. It's not like we both know about both games.
Because you played a game, and you liked it.
Yeah,
and
it was
I played
great.
A game, and I did not like it.
Kaz hates it.
So we'll get into that in a little bit. First up is our segment.
Oh.
It's the one segment that we have.
I love segments.
Skulls Asked, wherein we take listener questions.
Mm.
Our first comes from Dracon.
Hello, Dracon.
I know where that goes. Let's,
into the garbage box.
Nope. I have to do a quick cut and paste. Before, when we had that question about, like, Unity and Construct, there was, like, the first part leading up to it that I kind of deleted.
Oh.
I found where it went. Anyway, our first question comes from Dracon, who asks, "Recently, I've been roped into DMing for some friends. I've played in plenty of games, but never ran one before. Do you have any tips or advice for running a campaign, D&D or otherwise?"
Oh, God. I've DM'd, like, twice, and I had to prepare for about 2 months to run two sessions that each lasted, like, 2 hours. So really, Kaz, take it away.
Hey, I've done a lot of DMing, and I don't often do quite that much preparation. I like to prepare possible events and settings and the world, and I spend a lot of time doing that. And I don't prepare specific dungeons all that much, or missions. I let those kind of develop out of the setting and get everybody in the same place, and then give them like sort of similar goals, and then go. From my experiences as a DM, I do have a little advice to give to up-and-coming dungeon masters. First of all, if you're playing like online with people, try to limit people's use of the computer if you can. I realize this is a challenge because, you know, if you're on Skype or whatever, you might even be using an online tool to be able to interact and do everything, but the computer is a time-wasting device, and people have the internet right there, and they're going to get distracted very easily. If you're playing with people at an actual tabletop, do not allow them to use their computers. Tell them that they are here to game, and put the damn computer away. I don't even care if you have your source books on it. Keep it closed. No internet, no computer. Being absolute hard and fast on this rule will save you a lot of future grief. Save everybody a lot of future grief. I've found that it's better to just cut that all out rather than try and like adjudicate it any other way. That's a big one that you wouldn't expect. Make sure everybody like has food, but not at the table. So making something of a tradition of like all going and eating first, or preparing a meal and talking about the game and then playing the game, is usually better than just letting everybody feed themselves at whatever time. Because invariably, things go on for a while, people get hungry or thirsty, they start getting distracted because they're thinking about food. It's way better to like be in post-food coma. Wait, post-food coma.
Thank you, listener, post-food coma.
Sorry. It's way better to be in post-food coma than it is to be sitting there playing and thinking about food instead of like whatever the adventure is. Because you want as few distractions from what's going on as possible. By the same token, you want what's going on to be of interest to people. So make sure it's interesting and fun, and that they have things to think about and do, and things to challenge them. Maybe even little stupid riddles and puzzles. You can find a great deal of resources for shitty puzzles online if you go looking for them. And a lot of them aren't actually all that shitty. It's just that who wants to, like, sit there and come up with puzzles.
Love
you can
puzzles.
Also use mathematics to your benefit. If you're handy with math, then you can come up with a lot of math puzzles really easily. Make sure that you know what your players like to do. There's some literature in any given Dungeon Master's Guide. DMG 3.0 has this. DMG 4 has a little more of it. And it's understanding what kind of people like to play this game and being able to identify the players that you have. And if you can figure out what people are like and what they like to do and how to work with them to have fun, then everybody gets to have more fun. And it's a great task, and though I do like DMing, if I did it for too long with any given campaign, I would just increasingly get really, really frustrated at it, and I would end up not having fun. Mm. Everyone else had fun, I would not have fun.
Yay!
For me, it was work.
Sacrifice.
And I ended up doing a lot of work. It was like mind-blowing because I didn't get anything for it, you know? It's like felt wrong. But hey, put smiles on their faces and let them jam around in space. Matter of fact, I should have my own source book up pretty soon.
Yay, so source books!
Like, you can go find my Star Troid source book.
Do not let any lawyers or cops know about this source book.
I heavily plagiarized it.
It's mostly stolen.
Ah, what else can I say to, like, someone who has never DM'd before?
Yes, but?
My own personal style, you're right. I like to give players a challenge, and they need a challenge. Throw them into warfare, and they will survive. Put them in deadly situations, and they will live. Don't hold back. Be willing to kill them too. A lot of like starting out DMs are like, well, I don't really want to kill players. It's more fun when people live. No, it's more fun when they know there's something at stake, and that they have to fight their way out of that. Remind them that there are often options for them to run away. Suppose one of them gets killed, and then the rest of them are having a bad time of things. They could run away. They could go and resurrect that guy later. That becomes its own quest, too. It's like, oh man, we have to like go find our friend's corpse and go resurrect him. And that becomes like an intermediate goal that they all have some personal stake in, because the guy who killed him also like taunted and laughed at them, and they want to, you know, they want to push his nose in. And that comes about naturally. But it never would have happened if you weren't willing to whack the guy in the first place, you know, lucky crit from a monster or not. I would often tune monsters up just because I thought they were kind of wussy. And I would also take monsters that were like way out of the party's range and kind of cook them down a little so they would have the kinds of deadly things that players don't usually encounter at like level 4 or whatever, like being turned to stone. And yeah. There's a lot of it, in Dungeons & Dragons at least, there's a lot of stuff for built in to be fail-safes and alternatives and options. Death is not the end in D&D. And that's something to explore. So be hard on them.
Yeah, I guess.
Don't pull your punches. I'd like to say be hard but fair, but it's so hard to be fair. You may just focus on
being hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're being unfair, your players will probably let you know, and they may or may not be telling the truth.
Hmm.
Thank you.
That's about it. Yeah, that's a really huge question.
I guess all I can say is if you're the kind of DM who does like to plan out things, like, I meticulously can't plan out, like, a dungeon map, and it's like, okay, they go here, and there's this puzzle, and they go here, and like, okay, they'll see this, and there are these monsters and whatever. If you'd want to plan not quite that much, what you can just do instead is figure out, like, okay, you know, today they're probably going to fight, like, guys that are about this hard, so let me set up a couple guys that'll be, like, good. And then if it seems like it's too easy, I'd throw three more guys at them. Or I just start, you know, I give them the bad guys some other advantage. And then just be like, okay, you know, if they go, like, it's, I've heard that this is, like, kind of a bullshit thing to do, because then you're giving players fake control if, like, no matter which way they go, they'll run into some flavor of X. I'm fine with this in a game.
No, that's totally fine.
And I think that if you take huge issue with it, then you have more time to plan things out than I do, or you have an extremely high tolerance for a game where literally nothing happens because the players chose the path where nothing happens, which is boring and horseshit.
Oh, no, wait, happen. I have one more thing.
One more
and
thing.
That's, if you're going to fight, don't do it in a featureless open battlefield.
Oh my god, please have things in the way.
Have features. Trees and shit, a
it's
rock.
It's gotten to the point where I basically, like, no longer build characters that can function in a featureless battlefield. They require features to, like, not die instantly.
Yeah.
They need, like, some kind of bullshit they can pull. We're like, oh, no, I'm behind a rock, or I'm up in the tree.
Yeah,
or
rocks,
I'm in the river,
trees.
Or something.
Rope swings, water.
Ropes.
Being indoors, in caves, corridors.
Yeah. There has to be, like, some kind of bullshit I can pull.
Tables,
because I'm tired of
chandeliers,
just, you know, ramming the action figures against each other.
Stairs.
I want to, like, I fly up here, and then I hide, and then I drop down on him and put him in a chokehold and electrocute him.
Arcane teleporters.
Because I'm great.
Spring-loaded pistons.
Crushers.
Gigantic
traps,
machine parts.
Traps that somehow, like, synergize with the monsters. I did that once, and that was cool.
Yeah, fire trap plus iron golem. Yeah.
It was like, it was a trap that just made you, like, there were, like, these monsters that had, like, really high to hit, but did, like, 1d2 necrotic damage or whatever. But then there was a trap that gave you, like, vulnerable 10 necrotic.
Oh.
So it was like, if you get hit by this trap, suddenly it's like a pack of motor beasts. My players liked it.
Yeah.
Because there was, like, a logic to the trap that they could figure out. And then, like, so, like, the first round, a bunch of them got hit by it, and it's like, whoa, but then, like, by the fourth round, they knew how to position and not get hit by it. But it was still this neat little sub thing going on.
Yeah, and as far as positioning goes, in 4th Ed, there's a lot of shoving, too. So
4th Ed is a game about shoving people one square. If you play, like, depending on what, like, I don't know what game you're playing, so maybe it's one with, like, less firm tactical miniatures rules, so who knows. Your players will cheat back. I don't usually mean, like, literally cheating, like, lying about a die roll, but I mean that they're gonna do, like, degenerate horseshit, and, like, detect how much of that they're doing, and give them just as much back. Usually if I, as a player, am doing degenerate horseshit, it's because I want some of that from the DM.
That kind of a personal challenge, like,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah, it's like,
come on.
I dare you to, sometimes
enable
I'm like,
hard
I dare
mode.
You to try and kill this guy. Figure it out, DM. This is your puzzle. Kill this impossible man. Alright, so that's DMing. Don't take my advice, take Kaz's.
I don't know, you said some good things in there. I think that you over-prepare in the wrong ways, really.
Probably.
And you also have to be able to deal with people and strangers.
Deal with people to, like, make up the worst horseshit imaginable, like me. Yeah, run a game for me. You'll get good at players who just want to, like, completely ignore everything and, like, do something involving rope.
Well, there ain't going to be any damn rope because we're in space.
Space rope. There's always rope.
There's not rope.
Why?
Not gonna be rope.
There's cables.
Look, no. I tell you what. There will be a rope. You can go on a quest to find rope.
Oh, yeah.
That could be like your life's goal, is to find rope.
I'll be like really powerful and feared because
I'm. No, you'll be a rope collector and a strange hermetic weirdo. But that'll be fine.
That'll be fine.
I think we have time for one more question because
let's do
of
it.
What the question
Slam
is.
Slam it.
Listener Irrational Symmetry asks, what are your thoughts on Minecraft?
It's a game.
I don't think it's a game. I think it's more like a building block.
It sort of depends.
World.
I mean, okay, now we're into sort of dangerous territory. We have to define game. The game doesn't
have, like...
I've
been carefully avoiding that for years.
Minecraft doesn't give you a built-in goal, but it does have a built-in failure state. At least in survival mode, if you're playing in, like, creative mode or whatever, you don't have a fail state, and it really is just a
sandbox. Wait, there's a survivor mode?
Where you have hit points and can die.
What?
Yeah.
Oh. I guess that's a game.
Yeah, I mean, well, like, I've taken to a pretty lenient definition of game. It is a system with rules that you interact with, and it has some sort of end state to it. Either
well,
failure,
for,
victory,
for my
both.
Part, I like building Legos.
Legos are pretty okay.
So I'd rather do that.
Yeah, if you want to build stuff, build with Legos. The way I played and enjoyed Minecraft was that I would dig and find cool caverns full of monsters and try not to die in them.
Huh.
And then be like, I fell into this cave and there were like 8 spiders and 4 skeletons and somehow I killed them all and I found this pile of gold. And that would be, you know, my story.
Huh. You know, I think we decided at one point that the ideal way to run Minecraft is find, like, one each of 3 different types of people who
yes,
like different
you
things out of Minecraft.
You find one guy like me. You find one dungeoneer.
Yeah.
You find one guy who just wants to obsessively build complicated things. And then, like, what's the third guy?
Well, I don't know. Someone who turns some materials into other materials?
Yeah, the guy who just wants to, like, press buttons on crafting all day. So you have, like, the resource harvester, the resource refiner, and the resource user.
Yeah, something like that.
And, like, the resource... And then the cycle comes back around because the resource user builds things that let the resource collector, you know, move around, like, the world more quickly to places where you can better collect resources.
That would probably be ideal. Much a part of that, I don't really play Minecraft.
No, I haven't touched it in probably a couple years.
I think it's alright.
It's a game. They added a lot of weird features that I feel overcomplicate and make it worse.
Hooray!
Like, there's EXP now. And you gain levels. And it's like, why?
That probably should never have happened.
So you can, like, enchant items? No. No, you have a sword and you have a short bow. If you're lucky,
well,
you have a short
speaking
bow.
Speaking of swords and short bows in caves...
Yeah.
I think we can move on to our paired topic.
Minecraft is a game.
Minecraft is a game.
Okay, so on to our actual topic.
That's right.
A video game, and Kaz played a different video game.
Yeah, so why don't you start off with... what did you play, Minibot?
I played on the 3DS. I played Adventure Time, Hey Ice King... Why'd You Steal Our Garbage? Which is this neat little cartoon Zelda 2 sort of idea game where you're running around and it's stuff from the Adventure Time cartoon, so if you're familiar with that, everything seems familiar. But if you're not familiar with the Adventure Time cartoon, things still, I feel, would probably make sense. A wizard steals all of your garbage, and this is a problem because of the principle of the thing, mostly. So you go on a quest to rough him up. And it works like Zelda 2. You've got a top-down world map with locations you can enter and sometimes wandering monsters, and then once you're in, like, a dungeon or fighting wandering monsters, it turns into a 2D platformer, and you jump around and swing your sword. Except unlike Zelda 2, where you're this ponderous little elf idiot fighting with a pocket knife, the player character in Adventure Time 3DS can actually get things done in a fight, but it's still very basic. You have jumping, you have swinging your sword, and a few little extra things here and there. But it's intentionally kept pretty basic. Some of the enemies will do weird stuff, but a lot of them kind of don't. You go all around the world, and the soundtrack is good, and the visuals work very well, and the whole package is very good. And you talk to different characters, and they all have something silly to say, usually. And you go through the dungeons.
That sounds great. This is a 3DS only?
It's on DS and 3DS, but you want the 3DS version.
Why do you want the 3DS version?
Okay, I'm led to understand that, like, a tiny bit of content is actually missing from the DS version, and all the music sounds way worse, and considering how much I like the soundtrack, that sounds like kind of a thing. Also, the graphics look kind of weird on the DS. The 3DS is the real version of the game, pretty much. And then you run around, and there are a bunch of items, and you put condiments on food, and if you mess it up real bad, it won't heal you much at all. But if you do it right, you're smart, and you get a sea salt milkshake, which is the most powerful food in the game. And it heals you for all your hit points, and you start just, like, raining meteors from the sky, because that's what happens. And you go all over the place and talk to a bunch of characters, and the dungeons are actually pretty varied and interesting. The enemy variety could use some work. There are a bunch of pretty much direct palette swaps, and a lot of the enemy behavior is very, very basic. The level up system works pretty well. Whenever you open a chest and find a wizarding star in it, you get to raise either your hit points, your attack power, or your movement speed, which is much better than just, fighting monsters endlessly to gain a level. It's a much more, discretized system. You solved the puzzle and got the treasure. Your reward is increased avatar power.
So, what's the point of fighting monsters, then?
They're in your way.
So,
You just avoid them. If you get attacked by a wandering monster on the world map, you have to fight it.
Oh.
But in a dungeon or whatever, if you can... Sometimes they're pretty effectively blocking your path. But sometimes they're not, and you can just jump over and be like, see ya, dope. The problem with, like, this system is that, like, you can increase, like, your health, your attack power, or your movement speed, but it's... I'm pretty sure that, like, you always want to start off by increasing your attack power and your movement speed, because having faster movement speed lets you avoid enemies better, and I think you also move faster on the world map, which is kind of a thing, and maybe...
Hey, first upgrade in Gradius.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't want to be ponderous, and then it's like, well, I guess I should kill things faster, because nothing really hits that hard. The game overall was not terribly difficult for me to complete, but I feel like is still finding hidden things and exploring and, like, trying to find, all the treasure and finding secrets, was not trivial, and this is not a combat sort of thing, so it's not like, this is not a reflex part of the game, this is a thinking, how can I get that from here to there, or, where's the switch for this door, that sort of thing, and I like that. There's a New Game Plus, which doesn't have too much point to it. Everything, all the monsters are twice as strong, but nothing else really changes. Other than if you open up a chest that would have a level up, like, thing in it, and your level is already maxed out, you just get a giant bomb that you can throw at enemies.
Huh.
It's pretty powerful. The last boss is far and away the most difficult thing in the game, and was the first thing to properly kick my butt a few times.
Oh, wow, same. We'll get to that.
And I'm not sure I like it, because he would do an attack that made projectiles, and before the projectiles were even halfway to me, I'd start taking damage. And I still have no idea how that boss actually works.
Huh.
And I might need to yell at a guy on Twitter who made the game and just be like, yo, explain this crap. Everything else in this game makes sense. Other than when he, like, does his, like, icicle attack. Spoilers, you fight the Ice King in this game. It's in the title of the game. You fight the Ice King and he's, like, flying around shooting ice at you, right? Because, you know, the Ice King. But, like, I just start taking damage and getting murdered.
Well, it's coming at you in the third dimension. Duh.
I'm, like, the other side of the screen.
Play the DS version and see if that problem is still there. And I think
maybe
have
I should. But I then some
answer.
Other things happen. So my base. Here are the negatives about the game. Not too much enemy variety. Last boss somewhat nonsensically hard. Other than that, it's pretty good. You usually don't have to. Like, occasionally you must go through the same zone more than once, but it's usually just twice. And so you don't have to do it so many times that it becomes tiresome.
Hmm.
Secrets are reasonably well hidden. You know, I was trying to keep an eye out for them and didn't find all of them, and in fact finding one of the game's probably deepest and darkest secret, took me quite a while. It is very well hidden, and the game really doesn't want you to find it. But that's fine, that's not a problem. So, you know, not enough enemy variety, rude last boss, you kind of do move a little slow until you upgrade your speed. And I feel like I was sort of being punished until I upgraded my speed.
Hmm. I say you should go play Castlevania again. And then we can talk about...
Talk about move block
avatar
speed.
Avatar speed movement.
No, I'll stick with Kirby, thanks.
Yeah.
Well,
it sounds like the game is too easy. Because it's you, but I don't know that for a fact.
The game is... No, the game is not terribly hard. But... I mean, I don't view that really as a big negative. I mean, you keep in mind, this is a game based on a cartoon for children.
I've seen that cartoon, man. There's some real ass shit in there.
There is, but it's still... Maybe not all the people who watch it are, like, big video game people, and this is a good challenge level for them.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, like, I play a lot of video games, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't too hard for me to beat, other than, like, Ice King. What the hell is with that one attack he does? So I feel like it's okay that they chose this level of difficulty. The writing is pretty good. I mentioned
man,
that.
That's rare in, like, a video game.
Characters say jokes and things that you need to hear.
Man.
Not all the jokes are great. Some of them are. The best line in the game is spoken by the character Choose Goose. Who's a silly minstrel goose who runs a sort of kind of gray market shop. And he speaks in rhyme. He has, like, pantaloons and a hat with a feather in it. And his eyes are all googly, and he has wobbly limbs. He's the choose goose. And he tries his best to rhyme, and sometimes succeeds.
Outstanding.
I love him. I love
him. That sounds like a pretty good game.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about the game I played.
Oh, tell me about your video game, Kaz.
I played a game called Deep Labyrinth.
Whoa, that sounds cool.
It isn't.
Oh, no, I fell for the trap.
It's neither deep. It is arguably a labyrinth. This game.
This game.
It's a first-person dungeon game where you can't look up or down.
Okay.
So it's all very flat for being a 3D game. You're running around like Return to Castle Wolfenstein or whatever.
Yeah. That's actually what my mind jumped to was Wolfenstein.
Yeah, and you have a sword.
Okay.
Start with sword, and you have magic.
I'm the wizard.
You can learn magic either by leveling up or discovering magic words. That's all. I mean, it's not like you have the choice of which way you're going to do it. It's like these five spells you learn from levels, these five spells you learn from tablets or whatever.
Okay.
You accomplish either swinging your sword or using magic by touching the touch screen. There are four little spots on the touch screen that correspond to the different things you can do, either sword, magic, shield, or menu. And, I'm sorry, there's not menu. There's an item, like a belt.
Ah, belt.
Like the potion belt, and then menu. Because I forgot that you could do that. You have to equip potions in order to use them in a fight. If you're not in a fight, then you can go to the menu and use them, but you have to load them into your belt for fights. You scratch the touch screen with your sword equipped to make the sword swing, and the sword goes vaguely in the direction that you swiped. So that's kind of neat. It doesn't matter, though.
No.
Like, it's not like in Zelda and the Wiimote.
Skyward Sword.
It's not like in Skyward Sword where it matters which way your sword goes.
Basically, half the game is swinging your sword the correct way.
Yeah. It's just, you know, whatever. So that feature is useless and stupid, and it doesn't make a difference, and it doesn't mean anything. There's graphical difference, but it doesn't really, like, affect monsters.
Things don't
fighting.
Have to mean things.
Okay, about the monsters. There are lots of them. They all are the same, though.
Dang it!
Cause
we're two for two on that.
Okay, there's two. There's two different enemy types.
Two monsters.
There are. There's the monster type that's like every fucking monster, where you just walk up to them and rub your sword against them until they die. And they'll also do attacks or whatever. Then there's the monster that instead of... They're like little bees and moths and things.
Yeah.
And them, instead of being like models, they like stick to the front of your face. And no matter where you turn, they're always in the exact same spot and you can't get rid of them and you have to kill them. But that's only a very slightly little different from what you do with every other monster all the time ever. Almost every monster can be trivialized by starting your swing, running up to the monster for the moment that it strikes, and then retreating a little bit.
Oh, it's so rabbit slashing.
Yeah, you can rabbit slash almost every enemy, including bosses. The dungeons are boring.
Oh.
There's only like six of them, but they're huge. You go, like, the first area is stupid because it's just squares tied together, and so it's like, oh, another square field.
I don't love squares,
I
but
guess
I love squares.
I'll go to the next big room that is also a square in this big square field.
Square.
Hooray. And it doesn't feel like you're anywhere in particular. You got sucked into a dream world by an elephant man.
Oh, no.
And what?
Dream World Elephant Man.
What's wrong with that?
Alright, keep going.
Okay, fine. But anyway, you're a little kid. Your dog discovered a mansion that's magic, and you all get sucked into the dream world.
And you became Beetleborgs.
The kid, and both of the kid's parents, who are arguing and fighting about their loveless marriage that is falling apart. Alright, so you all go into the dream world, you get lost in a big dungeon that's really big and boring. Some doors you have to open by casting magic. I haven't talked about casting magic. There's magic!
You're a wizard.
Hooray, you're a wizard. You learn a spell, and you scratch a specific direction into the touch screen, and you do this spell. You have to, activate, spell mode, and then your screen switches to having this, grid overlay.
Ah.
And if you just...
The Arcano Matrix.
If you just poke in the middle of each square, that counts. So I did that for a long time instead of, continuous strokes. This system has been done better and is basically its best in Lost Magic. It's a DS game. Lost Magic is wonderful and excellent and great. It is the best use of the DS touchscreen that I have ever seen or heard of. And anyone else who has, cast spells by drawing runes is a worse version of that. This is a profoundly worse version of that. Because most of the spells are useless, it takes too long to do them, your sword is really powerful, and it carves monsters in half easily. You are a warrior. But magic stuff is for
crystals.
Sissies. Aquarium gravel! The magic is terrible. Also, it fails a lot because the grid itself is just a tic-tac-toe board with discrete squares. But a lot of the spells have diagonals to them. So when you're drawing a diagonal from top right to bottom left or whatever,
yeah,
you could very easily overlap one of those other squares.
Yeah,
and
see
then
what you're
that,
saying. That would dunk it.
That fucks up your entire spell.
It would
be 100% improved if they replaced the squares of sensory perception with circles.
Mm.
It would work so much fucking better.
That would basically be an improvement.
It would be a 100% improvement over what they have. All right. So that's all terrible. And
so you have magic, but none of it is worth
levels.
Anything.
One monster in the entire game is visually interesting. And it's a metallic morphing thing that becomes a bust.
Oh, yikes.
And it can also turn into other things, but it's that's really graphically interesting, and all the other monsters are really stupid looking. The hidden areas are really easy to find, and I found all of them on accident. It's not like they can hide them very well, given what the game system is. Okay. So, I get to the final area, wherein you have to, defeat the Dream Eater, because he's going to destroy all human memory.
Yes.
By eating dreams.
Devoured.
Hooray! And if you don't do this, then all human memory will be gone forever, including your parents' memories of you, so you want to get rid of him instead. And you use your weapons to fight him. But you don't! Oh! When you finally get to the boss... The final boss? Yeah. You can't swing your sword at him. It won't work. He's too far away.
Oh no. Kaz, oh no.
So you have to use magic.
But
and magic is terrible. I had spent the entire game not casting offensive magic, and now I am forced to because the game is bullshit. This is gigantic fat anteater, dream eater, who does things. And then you cast enough spells that he is destroyed, and only his core remains, and you have to fight his core. When you finally get to fighting the core, you can, on occasion, use your sword, and that got a little better. But it was so tedious, because you basically cannot do this fight at all unless you equip the one accessory that lets you regenerate your health and mana during a fight. I don't know if it would even be possible to do this fight, given how tedious it is, once you did that. Oh yeah, I went and fought the optional boss, but that was... It was just this big static thing that you hit a bunch, and then it dies. And the reward for the optional boss is a cell phone that if you activate it, it'll give you dialogue from the developers. This game was also made for cell phones first.
Goodness.
They, like, it rolled out, and its original version was a cell phone game. It's probably, like, badass as far as crappy cell phone games go, but it's kind of shitty. Now, okay, you defeat the boss and whatever, and your dog dies, and then you rejoin your parents, and you save their marriage, and they love each other again, and you, and that is the game. The plot is surprisingly heavy for what it is, and it's really dark. And I couldn't get past how fucking dark it was contrasted with how just, like, happy, shiny the graphics of everything else
nonsense
were. I mean, the save point is this big, fluffy animal creature, and there are lots of cartoon mice who give you helpful hints and call you kid, and most of the monsters have googly eyes and are just really friendly looking, and there's your dog, and he's... But then you're like... you talk to your, like, parents, and they're like, well, my life would be better without you in it, so I'm trying to forget you. And it's like, oh my god! Nice. Where is this coming from? This is just... It's just radically real. And perhaps the best part of the game, for how terrible it is.
Juxtaposition
now,
of...
Oh, but I'm cutting it short. Because Deep Labyrinth is two games. That's right. You can choose to play on Babby mode, which I did, because it said you should play this if you've never played Deep Labyrinth before. And then there's also Mondo mode, where you play a completely different game. Main characters, story, monster designs, dungeons, everything. Except all the equipment is the same, the interface is the same, the magic is the same, the rules of movement are the same, the monsters are actually the same, as it turns out. And this is probably the better version of the game, because this is the one that was, like, the original release. Like, the hard mode is the original game, which they had actually designed for. And the Babby mode is fucking stupid and terrible and awful in every possible way. But I did play enough of the Mondo mode to figure out that it was basically not actually fixing what is deeply wrong with the game, but rather just the little nitpicky parts are better. Some improvements. The dungeons are more interesting. The plot, such as it is not as fucking dark, even though it's trying to be. It's sort of the same thing that I have with Lorwyn and Shadowmoor, how Lorwyn is this really scary fucking place, and Shadowmoor is much more friendly-seeming.
Yeah.
Even though they were designed to be the opposite of that. Mm. Or perhaps because they were designed to be the opposite of that. But I don't, you know, I have a different way of trusting people. It's like, okay, Shadowmoor is dark, and there's, like, oofies around, but it's honest, you know? You see a Fulminator Mage, and you know that he wants to destroy your non-basic land. And it's obvious, so that's fine. You see a freaking Amoeboid Changeling. You don't know what the fuck he's gonna do.
He's the Chubstar.
He's the, like, real-world Ditto.
I always saw him as the Luma from Mario Galaxy.
Oh, I always saw him as a Ditto, but drawn as if in real life.
Maybe both. Maybe we're both right, Kaz.
But you don't know! That fucker is scary!
He's the Chubstar.
That's the same way that this game went. The main game, the Mondo mode, has way more hidden rooms, like, to the point where you cannot complete the game without discovering hidden rooms. That's not a huge problem, because you can just kind of rub yourself against every wall, and then...
Yes,
the
dungeon rubbing simulator.
Yeah, that's what it ended up being. And I realized that that's what was happening with the, like, hard mode, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be the rest of the entire game, isn't it? Nah, I can put it down. I can put it down at this point. Deep Labyrinth has one more piece of bullshit to share with you.
Oh.
And that is, bravely, your dog sacrifices his life to save yours right before the end of the game in batting mode when you have a dog. And they make a big deal about the spell of resurrection. What would you use this on? Spell of resurrection. Perhaps to revive your dog, who you, is the only thing that has ever died to this point in the game. Okay, well, to cast the spell of resurrection, you have to learn what the spell of resurrection is. You don't actually... You have to go... You go to, like, a big monolith and talk to the monolith, and it says, this is how to cast the spell of resurrection.
Lists.
It goes something like healing spell, light magic spell, death spell, and you repeat that 3 times. Or it's some variation of that. I remember how to draw it, but I don't remember what the things do.
Yeah.
So it's easy to understand. It's very difficult to execute because their input system is incredibly shitty. And I just tried to sit there and execute it regular-like before going to the place, because you can only cast the spell in this one specific place at the, like, Altar of Resurrection or whatever, that you have to go through an entire other dungeon to get to, even though you don't, like, know that you have to do this or whatever. Whatever, you have to do this. Okay, so you go to the Altar of Resurrection, you're confident that you can do the Spell of Resurrection. All right. And then if you didn't set an event flag properly or did things slightly out of order, it'll tell you that you don't have anyone to resurrect and it'll lock you out of it forever.
What?
That happened to me. What's supposed to happen is you go to the Altar of Resurrection, you walk onto the thing, fail to cast the spell, and die, because that's the penalty for fucking up the Spell of Resurrection. Which I accept, and that's cool. But whatever. So you die, and then you reload your save and try it again until it works. Then your dog comes back, and you have your companion dog, and you get the better ending, where it's the exact same fucking ending, but the picture has your dog in it as well.
Yeah.
And you revived your dog, who had given his life to protect you or whatever. Bullshit.
Thank you, dog.
However, I did things slightly out of order, I guess, and the event flag didn't get set properly, so when I walked onto the Altar of Resurrection... It, like, prepared as if it was gonna, like, do spell stuff, and I'm like, alright, I'm ready for this. And then it said, you don't know anyone who needs reviving. And then it, like, forced me off of the thing, and that was it. That was all I could do at it. And so I'm like, what?
Bullshit.
What about my damn dog? What? What is the point of having this entire area in the game? And I actually didn't know... And I was like, why is this area here? Is someone else going to die? Is it possible to, like, murder your parents and then you have to bring them back here? What is even happening? And so I ignored that and finished the game and it didn't matter. And I'm like, oh, okay, so that whole area was useless. And I only, like, I looked online later and it's like, oh, that's for your dog? Wait, why didn't it work? And then I just... It's fucking stupid.
Some bullshit is what it is.
That's the one extra little piece of bullshit that the game has. Deep Labyrinth. That is the last time that I buy a game on recommendation from no one. Not taking any, like, chances with just what a game description says anymore.
Because
I was there in the Starland, and I figured, okay, well, I want to buy some game, and I don't particularly care what it is. Let's buy something like this, and I go by genre, and then I, like, look at games by genre, and then I found this game. I'm like, oh, wow, $6. Sure. I'll spend $6 on Deep Labyrinth.
LP it.
Maybe I will, out of spite. I'll have to figure out a way to...
Okay, so run us down the positive features of this game. This is how we do reviews, is that if it's a good game, we review the negative features. If it's a bad game,
we review
the positive features.
I'll review the positive features of Deep Labyrinth. that, like I said, that one enemy design is really interesting.
Right. This one enemy looks cool. Okay.
One enemy is graphically interesting. Death spells are really severe. I like how cutthroat the game can occasionally be. Most of the time, the death spell, which just looks like this gigantic black eyeball that sort of like floats past you. Yeah. Most of the time it does nothing, but sometimes it just kills you. Because that's how the death spell works. And you can usually work it so that you don't even, like, you can't get hit by it. You can just dodge the damn thing. But if you're forced to take one, it's not just end of the game. It's like, okay, 50-50, or... It's more like 25, honestly. And you can also have death resistance, which lowers the percentage chance it'll work. But I do love how cutthroat the game can be with things like fuck up the resurrection spell and you die, get hit by a death spell and you die. That's good. I don't think that there's anything else good.
That's it. Okay. So, that concludes our review of these two games on on DS and 3DS or whatever.
Yeah.
That involve dungeons and swinging a sword around.
Absolutely. They have that minor link to them. You know, the other good thing about the Mondo version of the Deep Labyrinth game?
Actually called Mondo version?
It isn't.
I was going to say, like, that sounds like a feature, Kaz.
It's called Story B.
Oh. I thought it would, like... Okay, so we got to put, like... We could have a whole cast about idiotic names for difficulty levels.
Yeah, we probably could. We would have to do research.
Yeah. We could have a panel about it at MAGFest.
Yeah, let's do a panel about it. But no, the other good thing about the B story is that there were many more enemies... who are flying skulls.
Skulls.